This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
With your host, Andrew Donaldson, this is Heard Tell.
Welcome back to Heard Tell. I'm Andrew Donaldson. Thank you so much for giving us the most precious thing you have, your time, so we continue to try to do what we always do, turn down the noise of the news cycle, get to some information that we really need to discern the times we live in. I want to highlight a story out of West Virginia that we've been covering and following and trying to get more information about. It is a horrific story. It's been widely reported. We will link to a couple different places. And some different folks, but there's a 14-year-old girl who, for all practical purposes, was found starved to death on the floor of the home she lived in. She was in the bathroom. She was in a, and this is a direct quote from the criminal complaint, a skeletal state. We have reporting that she had been taken out of the school system several years ago. A family member reported that this child had maybe been out of her house once or twice in the last few years. The mother has been charged and is in jail awaiting criminal proceedings. But for those of us who have been advocating and trying to cover and bring light to the situation of endangered children and the abomination that is the Child Protective Service system in the state of West Virginia and elsewhere, CPS has issues everywhere, but especially in West Virginia, this is the worst case scenario. I'm going to just read what I wrote on my Substack, hurtell.substack.com, last week, because if I try to riff on this without going off something written, I'm not sure I can get through it. I'm probably going to say some things I will regret later, so I'm going to try to stay real level because this is infuriating. In West Virginia right now, every third commercial between now and the primary here in a couple of weeks is all about for the children, and we have to protect our children, and usually they mean that in some culture war way. And things like this. Meanwhile, while they're doing all these, you know, these gubernatorial candidates are running nonstop ads for millions of dollars about for the children, we had a child actually starve to death and nobody seemed to notice until it was too late. Do you know how long it takes for somebody to starve to death? Most Americans have probably never actually seen starvation. To get a body into a skeletal state means it's not only been starving to death, but the body has adapted past what it normally would be able to handle to try to continue to survive, and it gets even worse. If you've done some things overseas, if you've been to other places in the world where starvation is a living thing that is right in front of you, I have. You never forget it. It's something that is inconceivable to somebody that grew up in America, and where even our level of poverty very rarely raises to what's happening in places like, you know, Africa, parts of Asia. I've seen a lot of crap what's going on in Haiti goes past almost all of that. Point is, it takes a long time for a human teenager to starve to death. That's not a couple days. It's not a couple of weeks. It takes a long, long time. And yet this girl starved to death. And we'll get the full report later on in the criminal trial, but that's what basically happened here. And the mother's been charged. But I want to read what I wrote on the Substack. I wrote this about a week ago. We're still waiting on a lot of answers. We are clearly having a cover-up. We are having a government that does not want us to have the answers to this. We have a child protective system and a Department of Health system in West Virginia that does not want the answers to come out. We have a governor who isn't paying attention, and I doubt he even bothered to check. He said, well, of course CPS didn't know anything about this. That's a quote. It's on record. It's on video. We have that quote now. Family members say they did tell CPS. We will find out. We have a state government that over and over again loses, air quotes, emails regarding things like this. We have a CPS system that is broken. We have children in child protective services they can't even find. Back in the fall, we had a case where CPS was told about some kids living in a shed and swore up and down that they had checked on it and everything was proper. We found out that was not true. Until social media and news media and the really good reporting, we're going to link to a lot of what I'm saying has been reported on by other people, places like West Virginia Watch, places people like Amelia Nicely. We're going to link to all of that. Make sure you're following them. Point is, this keeps happening. And the reason it keeps happening is because nobody has stopped it yet. And now we have the worst case scenario of a 14-year-old girl who starved to death, dropped out of the school system, basically disappeared from all accountability for a period of 3 or 4 years and is now dead and died a horrific, long, agonizing death to get there. This needs to be a line in the sand moment for the people of West Virginia to demand a better government, a better accountability, a better everything, because this should not happen in the year of our Lord 2024 anywhere, especially in beautiful, wild, wonderful West Virginia. This just is not acceptable. Here's what I wrote on the Substack. What you don't know won't hurt you, goes the saying. It's utter nonsense, of course, but folks say it anyway. Why? What you don't know can kill you or could kill others or can damage, injure, destroy, and wreak havoc far and wide. Not knowing is not an excuse, I was told over and over again in the military, and saying I don't know or I didn't know just makes you look foolish and unprepared at best and liable at worst. Well, allow me. Boone County is the very heart of coal country. The landscape is endless hilltops and valleys, blanketed with green everywhere except where roads cut through, rivers and creeks wind through, or coal has been ripped up to leave open earth scars. Every stereotype of West Virginia can be found along the mostly two-lane curvy roads going around and between the 3,000-foot mountains. The good parts of West Virginia, the enduring folks who just keep getting by no matter what, are there in the areas where people do live. Geographically, Boone County is mostly mountainous wilderness, though. Not a lot of people. Outside of the traffic up and down U.S. Route 119 Corridor G, Boone County isn't somewhere you accidentally wind up. You don't go to Madison, Danville, Whiteville, or Sylvester unless you mean to, have a kid playing sports, visiting kin, or you are truly lost. And now in Boone County, gave us, those of us who have been desperately trying to get attention on the endangered children in West Virginia, the worst case scenario. Allow me to read the initial report from West Virginia Metro News. We will link to it. Boone County Sheriff Chad Barker said deputies were dispatched to a home in the Morrisvale community Wednesday to investigate a reported death. This would be Wednesday, April the 2nd. When deputies arrived, they found the body of a 14-year-old girl on the bathroom floor. Investigators described the girl's body as, quote, emaciated to a skeletal state. Authorities arrested Julianne Stonemiller, 49, of Morrisvale. She's charged with felony child neglect causing death. A criminal complaint filed in Boone County Magistrate Court described the details of the discovery of the victim that is identified only by the initials KM because it's a minor. Chief Deputy Mark Abbott wrote in the court document they were interviewed. The victim's grandmother said the girl had an eating disorder which dated back years and had not been eating for the last 4 or 5 months. She further told investigators the child's health had been in decline for months or even years, and in the past 4 or 5 days, the condition became so bad she was unable to function on her own. Quote, KM's physical appearance was shocking with obvious emaciated skeletal state, read the complaint. Grandmother also said the teen had not attended school since 2019 or 2020 and hadn't been outside the house more than a couple of years, maybe once or twice in the last 4 years. With the overwhelming, this is a quote, the overwhelming visible condition of KM's body and the clear and distinct physical problems, Miller failed to obtain any medical treatment for KM for at least the last 4 years, Abbott wrote. It is believed this neglect caused the death of KM, a 14-year-old child. Back to my words. You just run out of words at some point. Decades of the child protective system in West Virginia being various shades of incompetent, corrupt, and ineffective, combined with a state government obsessed over giving attention and spending money on anything and everything else, lest attention be paid to the crisis of the endangered children, has perpetuated the problems. Nothing seems to break through to the public. And in a time when the outrage drives news cycles and for the children is attached to every policy, there doesn't seem to be anything that can make the public or the government give a damn about the actual children that need outrage on their behalf. Losing track of kids altogether during the pandemic did nothing to get the public sentiment going about the crisis. Even headlines about kids found living in locked sheds came and went with ever-shortening viral news cycles with nothing really happening. Those of us who have been writing, talking, begging, screaming for anyone, anywhere to pay attention to what is happening to the endangered children in West Virginia over the last few years now have a worst-case scenario to point to as to why we have been doing so. The soul-crushing part, I fear, is the disgusting scene of the skeletonized corpse of a 14-year-old teenager who starved to death over the course of months and years, won't up the give-a-damn quotient from the people in government enough to do more than what we're doing. And what does that say about us as a people? Well, God forgive us. But now you can't say you didn't know. Since then, there's been more reporting by Amelia Nicely and others that the mother contacted Boone County Schools and said this child would be homeschooled. We're awaiting to see if there's any records of follow-up. We're awaiting to try to get any information of any kind about anything about the period of abuse and if anybody knew. What did they know and when did they know it? The old reporting adage goes. Well, somebody knew something because this girl didn't just starve to death overnight. It took a long time. And all the problems that are inherent in the child protective system in West Virginia all swirl around a dead teenager who starved to death. Have we had enough yet? You think maybe we can use our social media for something other than sending pictures of cats and complaining about government and actually start sending news stories like this to make our government actually do something productive to keep things like this from happening? We better, or it'll keep happening. We're going to talk to Kelly Caseman, Think West Virginia Kids. She's been on the program before. More insight on this. I will collect myself. We'll have more Heard Tell right after this.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Welcome back to Herd Tell. Okay, I wish we were talking about something else. We only seem to bring her on when it's bad news, and unfortunately, we've got the worst case scenario story to talk about with her, but she's the executive director of Think Kids West Virginia. We talked to her about all things West Virginia when it comes to the CPS. We've done other episodes. We'll link to them. Make sure you go back and read them. Kelly Caseman, great to talk to you again, ma'am. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing, Andrew?
To repeat myself, I wish we were talking about something else, but I don't know what else you can talk about. For those unaware, I've been spending a lot of time back up in West Virginia. We just had a big family thing last weekend. Because we had family in, we had new people from out of town that we were introducing to our family. My oldest daughter's fiance, we're watching TV. Every second or third commercial, at least on West Virginia TV right now, as we look to the primary, is all about the children. And we got to do this and that for the children. And now we have this story out of Boone County, which is the absolute worst case scenario of for the children and the hypocrisy of that I think I've ever seen. We have a 14-year-old girl who basically starved to death on the floor of the home she lived in and hadn't been out of for several years, by all accounts. The mother has been charged. For those of us that have covered this for a while, you've done this for a while. We've talked about this just 6-7 months ago. This really is one of the worst case ones, and why we do what we do when we try to advocate for these children, isn't it? Because we warn people this is happening, and now it's happened.
Right. Well, it's such a terrible story because clearly the child languished for a number of years in, you know, what were multiple red flags for both Child Protective Services and for the public school system, as well as family. And it didn't take long after the story broke that we heard from family saying that they called CPS repeatedly. And that's when we saw this whole process begin, this kind of ugly process from our state systems, where they seem much more focused on trying to cover up and refuse to cooperate with reporters. And we know precious little about what happened to this child, other than this child has been homeschooled since February 2021. Amelia Nicely reported that this morning. That's all she could get from the school system. And that, like you said, the family members hadn't seen her outside for years. The family member said that she hadn't been able to walk or care for herself on her own for weeks. And so there were multiple red flags. And again, you know, nothing happened. And the 14-year-old's life got cut short because of it. So it's sickening. But Andrew, you and I only talk when, you know, this story happens time and time again. And the problem is we don't have systems that are being held accountable and taking responsibility to ensure that these things don't happen again.
Yeah. And that's the key, because people that probably don't know all the backstory on West Virginia. And by the way, lots of states are like this. This is not just a West Virginia problem. CPS is a problem everywhere. CPS is like a lot of things. There's a lot of good people trying to do good things in it. It's also a beast of a system that lends itself to all kinds of abuses and neglect. And it's the system that is charged with preventing abuse and neglect, which is the problem. It's a vicious, ugly circle. In West Virginia specifically, because people are going to be like, well, the mom's charged. What do you care that, you know, let the courts work? Well, yeah, we're going to let the courts work. And this mother's already been charged, and that'll work itself out. This didn't happen in a vacuum, though, Kelly. This happened in a sequence of events. So when we have stories like kids locked in a shed, and we know CPS were told and CPS never went and visited, and it took months of reporting to get all that kind of information out. When we now have, you know, court cases with various government agencies where they lose, and I'm doing air quotes, lose emails. You don't lose the emails. Somebody deleted them. We have those in court records now where the state admits this happened. We have an accountability problem on stuff that is legally mandated to be accountable. And now here we are with this story. We're already starting to get the stone walls. Where Amelia Nicely, one of the great reporters, thank God we have her in West Virginia, just tweeted out some of the Freedom of Information Act stuff she gets from Health and Human Resources. It's literally black pages of white where they just redact everything. This is not just accountability, the buzzword. There's legalities to this, and it really is harming and killing children. And this keeps building and building and building. And now here we have the worst case scenario.
Completely agree. I mean, you and I were talking earlier about the release that came out from the Department of Human Services after the death of Kennedy Miller is the 14-year-old girl's name. And I just wanted to share this quote that I found, you know, just absurd. "Let us honor the memory of this young victim by supporting the tireless effort of our CPS workers and working together as a community to create a safer environment for all children." So usually when you have such a, you know, a terrible tragedy happen, you hear your systems say, you know, there's going to be an internal investigation, you know, we'll share the results for the public. And if any of our workers did something wrong, there will be consequences. That's not what you got from this release. What we got from this release was essentially, none of you are going to know what happened because there is code, and essentially we're going to shield ourselves from any kind of public discourse and accountability for what has happened. And you know, I've never seen it stated so flagrantly that they feel no need for transparency in a moment like this, when the public is really, I think, escalating for answers as to why these sorts of things keep happening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You work on the advocacy side, Kelly Caseman, Think West Virginia. You work on the advocacy side. So let's start with that part of it, because let's be honest, government is only as accountable as you make them be accountable, because that's just inherent in a representative system. We all know that. We know it intrinsically. It doesn't have to be explained to us. Government will get away with whatever it can get away with unless you restrain it from doing so. I feel a little bit of optimism, even with these horrific headlines we've been getting, though. I think on the advocacy side, we're getting some movement among regular folks. Their social medias are picking up these stories. We have great reporters now in West Virginia. We just mentioned Amelia Nicely, a lot of others. We're going to talk a lot about the West Virginia Watch work on this stuff. But they take that reporting and they start putting it on their social media. They start talking about it. Just from the advocacy side, true advocacy is getting normal people involved enough to get some headway and make a wave and get things done. That's the goal, right?
Right.
Are you seeing some positives? Because I'm starting to see a few in the darkness here. I'm starting seeing some few points of light where, yeah, I think this is starting to break through where normal people are like, no, wait a minute, enough. We need to do that. Talk to that side of it a little bit.
So I certainly think West Virginia Watch, I saw a great editorial on Parkersburg News Sentinel. I don't know if Steve Allen Adams' newspaper that was about this case as well, about the lack of accountability. But you're absolutely right. I think it's unprecedented the amount of conversation that is happening on social media. I think that there are a lot of families in West Virginia who have individually been affected by CPS, and it could be on both sides. They may have been, a case opened when they felt as if, there was no abuse or neglect in the case, and it drug out for a long time, and they felt as if they were treated inappropriately by a CPS worker. When you have a broken system, you know, it can break in a variety of ways. So kids may fall through the cracks, families may feel harassed, but at any rate, these people are really starting to coalesce around this issue, and they're having more dialogue. What we're going to see now is whether or not that building of momentum, it can manifest itself in ways that can change policy. And that's a big, lever to pull. Can that happen? Do we have the right advocates in place who can help inform what that policy will look like?
Yeah, so that goes to the legislative, because that's where Governor Justice came out and said, well, we need to throw more money at this. Throwing money at something has never in the history ever fixed anything. It's, can you target the money to get it where it needs to go? There's some bipartisanship, as much as it can be in a supermajority in the legislature. We had, I appreciate it too. Delegate Holstein, who's the delegate for Boone County, came out and said, and this is a quote, this is a conversation we should have had yesterday. I completely agree with him. I think he's right. We need to talk about some things like, you know, reporting things for homeschooling. We don't have these records yet. This is part of what's being held back is, look, if you're homeschooled, you still have to report stuff to the state. Was that being done? Was there red flags that were missed? We think they will be. We'll see if it comes out. But I think that quote is absolutely appropriate. This is a conversation we should have had yesterday. Legislatively, there's not one law, though, that's going to fix all this. We're not going to name a law after this kid and pass it and it's going to solve the problem. It's a systematic problem. When they split DHS up, one of the first things I said was, well, look, at least they're trying to do something. I appreciate that part. But more levels of bureaucracy is going to exacerbate the problem. Legislatively, what do you think we need to be doing besides just some targeted legislation? Obviously, CPS is funded, you know, invert a lot of like the education system. The top's getting a lot of money and the people on the front lines aren't getting enough, that kind of stuff. Legislatively, what do you think we should be looking at trying to do here?
So I completely agree. I hate constantly hearing we just need CPS just needs more money. It would be fixed if you throw more money at it. There's no proof of that is going to happen.
This is the largest department of the West Virginia government for people that don't buy a lot, by a factor of almost two. This is the biggest part of the West Virginia government. So it's not just money.
Right, right. And the last time you and I spoke, you know, I said to you the same thing that I've said for many years now, and that is that transparency, if we're going to look at good policy, transparency has to really broaden where we're listening, we're doing focus groups, we're doing town halls, and we're talking to people who have interfaced with CPS and what that looks like, and then create a state strategic plan as to incremental policy changes to ensure that CPS is working better with, say, the public school system, the healthcare system. We have preventive services on the community level. Is CPS connected with them to ensure that our mandated reporters are well-trained, they feel comfortable sharing information. And from what we hear repeatedly, people talk to mandated reporters, whether it be school personnel, pediatrician, and they feel as if they don't get any information back. And so there has to be more of a collaborative approach to addressing child maltreatment. We know that poverty exacerbates because of the stress that the family experiences maltreatment. But so did the opioid epidemic. And that is what has really kind of ravaged all of our systems, including child welfare. And so it's not going to be, it's a complex problem. We should know that it's not going to be a simple solution. It's going to be short-term, long-term, and a number of different policy changes. You know, any legislator who thinks that one piece of legislation is going to fix anything is looking for, you know, votes rather than to really fix the problem.
Yeah, Kelly Caseman joining us. I think one place that really needs addressed, and everybody who actually studies this issue agrees, is the frontline CPS caseworkers is a problem. Let me say this very carefully. Not all of the CPS caseworkers are problems. There's good people in those jobs doing really good work. There's not enough really good people doing really good work in those jobs. We can talk about the system and the bureaucracy, but the system and the bureaucracy is made up of people. So that's one level that we need to deal something with the bureaucracy. But the actual caseworkers, what can we do for them? Because we can't just beat them up because they're not all bad, and they are in a lot of them are in possible situations. You think somewhere like a Boone County or a Webster County that you may have one or two caseworkers for the entire county, 40, 50,000 people, and you're talking hours of driving just to go to some of these. It's almost impossible situation. Right. Practically, though, that's an achievable goal. How do we change the situation on the ground for these caseworkers? Because that's the first line of breakdown on a lot of this. It's not all their fault. Some of it is. what can we do to these actual caseworkers? Because that is something the legislature and the governor and public pressure could really focus on quickly and probably get some movement on.
So, you know, and you had mentioned it before, we not all employees are alike, and we all know this. You know, to say that all CPS employees are, you know, are wonderful, doing the best they can, most of them are. I certainly know a number of them, but there are some that aren't doing the job. You know, we have such a high turnover rate. We have such a problem with vacancies. What we need to do is ensure that the ones who are doing the job well are well compensated for their work, and that they, you know, have good benefits. You know, that's the best way to ensure that we retain them, and that they have the opportunity to move up the ladder. We need to stop acting as if all we need are warm bodies to fill vacancies. I think that continual professional development, once somebody is hired, to ensure that they understand the role of the work and that they have more assistance on the ground level to do the work that they do. Now, I know the DHHR, I don't want to, I keep calling them DHHR, they're not DHHR anymore as of January 1. So the Department of Human Services, you know, they have done a lot. I don't mean to just, you know, because in this moment, I'm just so exasperated by them. I know that they have done a lot to try and address these issues, not just because it's the right thing to do, but because there's this Department of Justice case, there's pending civil suit with the foster care system. I do think that they're good people trying to do the right thing, but it's more than just hiring people to ensure that they're dealing with cases, because sometimes it inevitably comes down to a judgment call. Somebody at some point over the past 4 years saw Kennedy Miller and chose not to follow up. You know, the odds are clear that that happened. So I, what really makes sense to me, back to your point, is that we need to get to a ground level, really talk with CPS workers and find out what can happen on that ground level in the communities to help them do their job better, and that they're better connected, and that they really understand the law as to what information they can and they can't share. Because we keep saying that nobody can know anything, and that really doesn't make any sense when you're trying to improve the system. You know, how can you know how the system needs improved if you don't really know what's going on within it?
Yeah, we're seeing over and over again, not just in CPS and the Child Protective Service issues, but also wider state government. The idea of retaining information, protecting information, is becoming this extra layer of shield to accountability. I'm sensitive to the need to keep private information private, especially when you're dealing with minors, especially when you're dealing with things that can become criminal cases like this. But at the same time, we got to have accountability on this. How do we walk that fine line, do you think? Because you're one of the, you know, again, advocacy, you're always going through records, you're looking at these things. How do we balance those things, especially in a digital age where, you know, you don't want everybody to be able to just Google the intricacies of a child welfare case? You don't want that. But the government, the press, the people have a right to know some of these things. How do we walk that tightrope in a fair way, do you think?
Well, I certainly think a way that we can start is by more PR, more information around what the federal law is and what it isn't. And I think that we can also look at other states and see how they deal with CPS. You and I have talked about this before. West Virginia is really kind of unique in the stonewalling of information from our government systems. And so getting a better understanding of what the state can officially do and what they cannot do by law. I mean, the shield has gotten so large that nothing penetrates it. We don't have a lot of information that we need as a community to understand what happened to this child to make sure it doesn't happen again. And so I think looking at other states, see what they do well, see the states that have better child welfare systems, what they're doing right, what they're doing well, and how they share information with the public. I think that that's a really good first step.
Yeah, to your point, we had a court case recently involving the state government where, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but not too far, the judge basically ruled that the system is too incompetent to be held negligible. Like, you just want to pull your own hair out. We'll link to that case, by the way, you can look at it. One thing you just mentioned, nomenclature, it's not just the data, It's also the way these things are charged. Now, this particular mother, I'm not going to use her name because, you know, spit on her, but she was charged with child neglect causing death. And a lot of people kind of recoiled when they saw this. They're like, wait a minute, a kid starved to death and that's what we're charging with. And we understand they have to charge it. And then later on, you know, it'll go to magistrate or work through the system. They may change that as it goes. There's been a big thing over the last 15, 20 years with things like abuse, especially things like sexual abuse and things like that. The federal government and a lot of state governments, they've changed the nomenclatures. They've expanded the laws to get a little bit more specific. I know the military added something like 25, 30 terms for things like abuse and assault and things like this to get the nomenclature more up to date. Is there something with physical abuse as well where we need to kind of look at some of these laws and maybe update some of the nomenclatures, especially when you're dealing with things like keeping home confinements, things like the things that can go on online where you can use social media to really abuse and treat people? Is there a need to update these laws where it comes to the physical way, the way we have with things like sexual abuse?
You know, I don't know, but I think that sounds like a great idea. You know, we've advocated for years now that what we need is a public and private stakeholder group that's really taking a deep dive into this. And I think that that would be a really important starting point. You know, just try and revise the policy across the board, make sure that we're up to date and we're comparable with what's going on with federal law and other states as well.
Kelly Caseman joining us. Let's go to what something we always want to get to. What can people actually do about this? Because if you just read the headline, click it, go, that's terrible, and go on, that doesn't help anything. What's some of those basic steps? We talked about just sharing the news stories on your social media, things like that, but those are basic steps in advocating for these children that otherwise aren't getting advocated for. Give people a couple practical points on what they can do. Obviously, the good reporting, we're going to put a lot of links to what we're talking about now in the show notes. You can click through that. We talked about the reporters and some of the outlets. We're going to link to all that. You can share all that. How do you share that to get people's attention, though? Give people a couple practical steps, because everybody's got their platform in the palm of their hand now, right? They can actually do something about this. They don't just have to rage about it.
Well, I think an important thing that you can do in this moment is it's an election year and everybody talks about kids. You know, that doesn't mean they're going to do anything for kids, but they want to talk about kids. And so tag your candidates in your area and ask them what they think about what's going on with CPS and make them commit to it being a priority. Make them engage in a dialogue about what is happening and what they're willing to do to address it. I think that you know, we have a number of legislators who, you know, will kind of say the platitudes, but they won't dig, you know, into the muck. Like some have, but, you know, we really need people to take a stand and make this be an issue that is on their radar. And I think that's social media is a great way to do that, because a lot of people are using social media to campaign right now.
Yeah, and they don't like messy social media. And it's not that you want to harass people. That's not what I'm saying. But if it's out there in the open, you can get, you know, that soundbite we talked about from Jim Justice. That's because a reporter asked the question, got him to say it. And now that's going to become a thing of, well, the governor said they didn't know. Did they know? And we can find that out as we go. Just putting it out there and keeping it in their face where they have to look at it a little bit and where their staff has to react, that can have some positive spin to it, can't it?
It can. It you know, like I said, it puts it on their radar. Then it makes them, you know, understand that this is an issue that is of importance to their constituency. And so when they get to the legislature and they have the ability to, you know, move legislation, it will be something that is, you know, on their radar. Like I said, I mean, you know, to be honest, many years you've seen bills come and go that focus on the child welfare system that just die almost every year. And so making people move change is really important. And, you know, don't just focus on your state legislature. Focus on, you know, your community candidates. Focus on the governor, because, you know, what we need essentially in this state is a commitment that the buck is going to stop somewhere, and that should be the governor. And so conversations, you know, with the governor, questions that you may pose to candidates, ask them as well. What do you expect from the Department of Human Services? You know, do they need to be more transparent? And you know, start citing the cases. A lot of people do a lot of investigation, not just of their state news like West Virginia Watch, but of their community news as well. So they know a lot about cases, Andrew, that you and I don't know about, that they should hold people accountable when they're talking with candidates for local elections.
Yeah, and one way or the other, West Virginia is getting a new governor this year, and they're gonna do kind of how the public trains them to respond to these things. And, you know, it's representative government. We get the government we deserve. We got to push these folks a little bit. Let's end it on this, because, you know, the name's right there, West Virginia Kids. Kids, you know, nationwide and worldwide, though. When I hear people, politicians talk about, well, for the children or whatever, and that term's been abused, how does it hit you, though? What do you look for actual doing things for the children? I know you do advocacy, but just in talking about and paying attention to these issues, how can we kind of take that term back to make it mean something other than just a buzzword folks slap on those advertisements that are every second or third commercial right now that hopefully need to go away soon because it's driving everybody crazy?
Yeah, well, you know, I've been doing this kind of work for about 20 years, and it's still... You know, I've gotten to the point where it really angers me when candidates use kids as pawns, you know, that they use them to make them look more kid friendly. But then once they're elected, they don't do anything for them. You know, there have been times when, you know, I have really been heartened by a number of candidates who show up for things, for community meetings. They really want to listen to constituents when they talk about, say, their experience with the child welfare system. I think that those candidates are still out there, but I don't think that, and I've been told this many times over the years, kids' health issues aren't nearly as important as, say, the economy. And that is going to have to come from that groundswell of people willing to make it an issue with those candidates. So, you know, if somebody is running, if they want to say I'm kid friendly, give a specific as to what you mean by kid friendly. What is it that you want to see? You know, are you going to support your schools? Are you going to support changes to the child welfare system? Are you going to address, you know, the adolescent mental health crisis that we have in the country? You know, be specific. Don't just say I support kids. That really... it has become very hollow and meaningless at this point.
Yeah, and that last one you just mentioned, adolescent psychiatric care, mental health care, that's a huge one because people are like, well, we asked the kid and they didn't report anything. Well, no, sometimes they've got to have a professional over a period of time to get into things like that. And the mental health care for our kids and teens is just that's a big missing piece to all this. So I appreciate you mentioning that. Kelly Caseman, always great on this stuff. I appreciate your insight and opinions and views on it. Thank you so much, ma'am.
Sure. Thank you, Andrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
And that'll do it for this edition of Heard Tell. Wherever you are, you can join us through whatever medium you're listening to. If you're on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, we're even on some podcasts over in India. You folks in India, we see you on the stats. Welcome. Thank you. Drop us a line. We're all over the world and on any podcasting platform you can think of. Make sure you're subscribing and or following or whatever that platform calls it. That helps us keep track of you, lets us know how you're listening to the program, make sure we can tailor it to get it to you. Heard Tell Show or my name, Andrew Donaldson, on any of those platforms, it'll come right up. But we have a one-stop shop for everything that we do, heardtell.substack.com. It's completely free. Subscribe. You get everything right into your inbox. Anytime I write, do a media appearance, do a new episode of Heard Tell. We also have Heard Tell specials. We're going to get back to doing the Twice on Sunday recap shows. We also have a huge archive, so we're going to have some specials, some best of things like that, and also some of the food writing from Yonder and Home. We're starting to re-up that as well. We got over 600 episodes of Heard Tell in the archive to start porting over. We're going to be working on that. So sign up for the Substack, please. Get you right in your inbox. Never miss anything. Doesn't cost you anything more than a click. Heardtell.substack.com. We sure appreciate it. And follow us on social media, Heard Tell Show on the Twitter, Four for the Fire is my personal Twitter handle. No, we're not going to call it X, but if you could share us and let folks know that our programs were checking out, we sure would appreciate it. So wherever you are, across the street or around the world, we hope you're well. We hope you are well fed. We'll talk to you real soon for the next Heard Tell. All the music on Heard Tell is provided under a Creative Content license from MonsterCat.com. Somos la máquina.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.